Accession number 10168, reel number 6.
Mr. Donald Price, reel 6. You were telling me about an incident when you were at the latrines with a friend.
Oh, yes.
And you saw a rifle.
Well, as I said, we were on these latrines, and this we could see this rifle grenade coming over, and of course we've got to make a dash for it, because we knew it was going to land near us. Unfortunately, we dashed off, and we got bare behinds and things, and lay in the bottom of the trench, and it exploded very, very near us. So, you know, you've got to be careful when you're on the latrine with all these things. See, these rifle grenades and what we call mini-werfers kept coming over regularly in those days.
I'll come to those. Mm. In the latrines, did the army provide you with paper? Or
oh, God, no, no such thing as that. You just, you know, had to do and wiped it with grass or something, wiped it behind with your hand and washed it, and that was it. And, you know, that's how you lived.
Were they regularly changed, or were they just...
Oh, right. No, you just, dug and covered them over when it's... You see, it'd be deep, and then you just cover them over when they were full. See? That's what happened in the trenches.
What about lice? Were lice a problem?
Oh, God, yes. Lice. An absolute curse. You were covered in lice. And if you weren't very careful, well, fellows did get a disease from lice, you know, with the scratching and the poison, I suppose, with these bloody things. And it was endless. You were issued candles, and more often our candles were lit, going up the seams of our trousers, up the seams of our coat to kill them. If you saw a chap with his coat off and a candle, you know what happened. We lousy with them, but when we were taken out of the trench, when we were out on rest, we were stripped. We got a bath, see, usually in a brewery or someplace, in some of these great big vats. We were chucked in this stone, we got a bath, we were naked, and we got our uniform. And our uniform was taken away. And by the time we came out, if it wasn't deloused, you're always given a new shirt or a new vest or something from the bath, you see. And then, of course, those, I suppose, were washed and they're given somebody else. But you're supposed to come out of that washhouse clean. You never were. Mm. You got lice the next day from the next chap or from the earth or God knows what. You're always with you. It was dreadful.
Did they eat you a lot?
Oh, dreadful. And when you're at night, when you're trying to sleep, you know, and these things are... itching all over your body. It got everywhere, in the seams of your trousers, the seams of your coat, and it was continuous. And nobody could say he was free of them. He wasn't. Whether the officers got him or not, I don't know. Whether the officers got him or not, I wouldn't know, but there was no soldier who wasn't absolutely covered in lice all the time.
Were there any other methods besides the candles and the baths?
I was talking to these kids down at school, and you know, one of the greatest things we used to expect from home was lice powder. We used to send home for it, and sometimes somebody got a tin of lice powder. It didn't do any good. But we used to love to see it coming from home, you know. Somebody spending that money on these dumb things used to feed on it, never mind. Cure them. It never did. You could never cure. They're so vast. Whatever you did, you clear them right, and then you go and change your place where you were sitting, or lying. You got the same. You see, I never went into a bed in France, never saw a bed. And we always lay on the floor, on our Macintosh sheet, or we were in a barn. Now, if you're in a barn, usually it was straw, which was lovely. But it was never changed. And you can imagine what happened in that straw after all the years, because it wasn't only me that slept on it, it was everybody, every division used to come to relieve us. And that straw must have been absolutely lousy.
Did it depress you? It sounds as if it...
No, you got quite used to it. I used to get fed up with it. You know, sometimes you've got this and the next day you're just as bad. And it was just endless. You got put up with it eventually.
What about rats? Were they a problem in
oh,
this
rats
sector?
Rats were dreadful. I mean, they were bodies, as you know, people being killed and not you know, and probably churned up in the earth, and these rats had come around and get at these bodies, get at dead mules, get at anything. They'd eat anything. As a matter of fact, I was in my cubby hole once, and I was sleeping, and I was on my back, and my pal was next to me, funny enough, and a rat ran over my chest, tried to pinch my cheese because I'd put it in a little tiny hole on the side of the. I'd cut a little hole in the earth, you see, and I put my cheese there. This bloody rat ran over me when I was asleep. When I woke up, anyway, it was there, you know. And you put up with it. Extraordinary, isn't it, really? How you put up with things.
And there were rats in that Bethune sector?
Oh, God, yes. Oh, dreadful. Rats everywhere. And they're great big bloated things, you know. They're fed on bodies and things. They're fed on everything and they're great big brutes, dead horses, anything, they go and chew it all up.
Did they not frighten you initially, before you got used to it? Or?
No, they didn't give a damn. As a matter of fact, when you at night, if you saw one running over your parapet, you sort of talk to him, you know. That's the kind of thing you got used to. Incredible, it's true. If you saw rats out there, you think, hello, you talk to him and hope he comes to you. When he was on the trip, but not when he was in your dugout.
When they were in the dugout, did you try at all to kill them or to reduce the numbers?
Well, you tried to kick them out or something like that. You see, if you started getting something and slashing at them with something loose, like a, you know, anything that was loose, they'd clear off.
You mentioned the bodies. Were there many unburied or partially buried bodies in the Bethune sector?
Not in the Bethune sector, no. You see, because I think the war hadn't been so severe in those days. And people, artillery bombardment hadn't been so intense then. And consequently, you hadn't got the deaths or casualties. And if you did have a casualty, probably he could be brought in. If he was wounded, he could probably be brought in, you see, before he was churned up again with more artillery.
What about the weather? I mean, you went in November, so you were there for the whole of the winter, 1516.
It was dreadful. The trench I was in, I'll tell you this, the trench was in Bethune, and we had waders, by the way, and I think the trench was up to your knees in water. And we had a fire step which we could sit on, you know, where you stand on. But the earth had been soaked. The whole of the earth was soaked in water. And I developed a boil just on my thigh. Now, you've got to understand how we were dressed. I'd got my equipment on, fighting on. I got an overcoat on. I'd got a goat skin, and I got a leather jacket on, and I got my waders on. Now, I've got my boil down here, and I've got the doctor came along in the morning, as usual, and he says, anything doing? I said, yes, sir, I've got a boil. He says, where? I said, down there, sir. And he said, let's have a look at it. Well, now, I've got to get my trousers down. Now, imagine it, an overcoat, all the equipment on, and I've got to get my trousers down for him to see. And it's raining like hell. Anyhow, eventually I struggled with this and all this and that, and I opened my coat and got my pants down and things like that. And he says, bend down, you see. Well, I remember I bent down and my ass, you see, touched the fire step. Well, the fire step was sodden. And as soon as I put a little bit of weight on it, it gave way. And I went with it, you see, with a bare ass and my boil in this muck, you see. And now the doctor looks at me and he says, well, he said, get up. Of course, I got up, and my trousers and me covered in crap, you see. And my boil had burst. And he looked there, there's blood there, you see. He said, you better get down to the first aid. So I got to walk. I walked down to Cambrin, you know, which is nearly a mile and a bit from the front line, walked down with my pants hanging out full of crap, till I got to Cambridge, to the first aid post, and it was WVS place, and I went in there, and some women there, you know, nurses, and I went in there, and they said, what's the matter? I said, this, so I got my trousers off, and they gave me a bath, see, washed me all down, and they bound me up, new pair of trousers were sent in. They got a new pair of pants for me, and off I went back up the line with a bandage on. That's true, that is. What you put up with?
Well, boils a recurring problem.
No, not with me. They were in the trenches, though. They were regular. That's the only one I got, but apparently boils were quite frequent in the army, quite frequent.
Did it mend itself after it had been bandaged?
Oh, yes. I found it was quite... It burst, and I was quite... they bandaged it up, and I'd got my waders on, over it, so...
You've got waders, and you've got all the rest of this stuff, but... With the wear, did you have to take any precautions against what they call trench feet?
Well, we got these waders. I once did get trench feet, even with waders on. But
was that while you were there that winter?
No, it was. I think it was farther down the line somewhere. I'm not quite certain where it was, but I remember it wasn't at Ypres. It was in winter somewhere.
What were the symptoms?
Well, you're completely dead. Your foot becomes completely... I got it my left foot, if I remember rightly. And my left foot was completely dead and white. And, of course, I had to... I think I had some massage or something. I've forgotten that now. And heat or something. But after 3 or 4 days, I got all right. My leg got all right. So it wasn't too bad.
Did you have to take any precautions against trench feet or other...
No, they gave us some fat. Some kind of fat. Which we had to put on our feet. And put your socks on. And then your waders. But this fat should have stopped it, but it wasn't until after I'd had my dose that we got the fat, when they found out that it had help a bit, you see.
Was the water level constantly high that winter, 15-16?
Well, it pretty dreadful, yes, because it was a bad winter in 1915, and... although it's certain parts of the line, what I call the line, might have been a bit higher than the other part, and consequently that would be a bit dry, you see. It's only when, say, the line, the trenches were a bit lower, say, than the earth itself, that's when it stuck around a bit. Of course, Ypres was a different matter entirely.
Did you make any efforts to... You mentioned that they were going to leave drainage to your common sense. Were you able to work out methods of...
No, you couldn't really, Bob. Too intense, you see. It was so, as far as you're concerned, there was the water, and if you did it, you cleared it, well, the next day might be the same. The winters up there weren't very nice,
So
in Belgium, they were dreadful.
So no sort of sump system would have worked?
Oh, no, couldn't do anything about it.
So you're very wet, and the mud is a problem. Another problem, the cold. Was it a very cold winter?
Oh, intense. And I say, you used to get your rum, and it used to help enormously. But, you see, you used to get... We got mufflers around our heads, from a home, and then we got big mufflers. And I had a cardigan. Well, I had a big overcoat. You see, you got the overcoat. I got a tunic on. Then I got a leather jerkin. Then I got a cardigan on. All this. And a wool shirt. See, probably two wool shirts. And that's how you...
You'd keep that on all the time?
All the time,
while
you're
in the line?
Never take your clothes off. Never, you see.
Did it not make things very bulky and difficult to move?
Well, I didn't want to move, you see. The only thing you did was to march. And when you got your ready pack on, you see, you're glad to have this round you. But it was so cold. You can't imagine how cold things, how your hands got. We got gloves as well, by the way. Wool gloves, but they were mittens. But your hands got dreadfully cold.
How did you try and warm yourself in any other way? You've mentioned
Well,
fire.
We tried to get, you weren't allowed to have any smoke coming up in the trenches. And consequently, it was pretty hopeless. If you went down a dugout and you lit a fire and there's any smoke coming out, you're for it, you see. Not from the officer, but from the fellow across the way.
Would you huddle together?
Oh, yes. Oh, you slept together, And you'd get together, probably his overcoat would overlap you and yours would overlap him and things like that, And he slept. Well, you were so bloody exhausted.
With all this, how did your health last during this six or seven
months? Oh, it was
months?
Wonderful. It never affected me at all. My health was good, really. I don't think I even got a cold. I don't think so. I don't remember getting a cold till very, very much later in the war when I got flu. But apart from that, I don't really think. I don't think I even went sick with a headache or anything like that. I can't remember it.
So the weather was mainly a cause of suffering, but not of illness to you?
Not of illness. Certainly didn't affect me as far as illness goes. It was discomfort. I mean, as far as water and cold was concerned, but as far as health is concerned, don't think it made any difference.
Now I'd like to look at the daily routine at this time, this 6 months. It's difficult for you to not any one day, but a sort of typical day I'm looking at. If we could perhaps start, and I realise that you may cover topics slightly that you've mentioned before, but not to worry. You started with, so if we could start with stand two in the morning. Would that be...
You stand down in the morning.
Sorry, yeah. You didn't stand two in the morning then?
No, you're up in the trench, you're up at the top. You stand two when you're on the top. You see, and you stand down. In the ordinary way, you see, when you stand two at night, everybody's on alert. And you've one man up there, and the other people alert. I mean, you're wondering about you standing up, ready for the idea they might be attacking, you see, at night. So there was one on the top there, and usually there's another fellow here, you see. And as far as concerned, that's it. Now then, say in about half an hour, you might say stand down then, so that you could get on with your ordinary work, you see, and leave those two fellows up there. And then in the morning, you see, again, you'd have another stand down, which get on with your work completely. This fellow would come off, you see, and you'd only have one sentry. See?
So that was how you worked it.
That's how you worked it.
So there'd only be one person looking over.
Oh yes. When you're standing two, there's only but he's got his backup. You've got a backup. The chap was sitting at his feet to keep him awake. You see, you'd have a word with him and hand him a cigarette down again. You might stand with him, but you are there. You two are on duty. You're on sentry duty, and you've got to do it between you.
When you did sentry duty, did you do sentry duty?
Oh, yes.
When you did it, how did you look out over into no man's land?
Well, we'd got a periscope, you know. And in the ordinary way at night, you couldn't use a periscope. And we just used to keep your eyes skinned, you know, and watch for any movement or any sound. That's all you could do. And the sound, of course, was... I mean, apart from shelling and rifle bullets and God knows what, which were a normal thing, you keep your ears open for tins being moved or, you know, things like that. And you were trained to look out of the side of your eyes, you know. Did you know that?
Could you tell me about that? That's interesting.
If you look out of the side of your eyes in the dark, you can sense any movement. And I was sort of trained to look out at the side of my eyes, you know, that way. And sort of, you feel. I always felt that I could see better, or sense anything better by looking out of the side of my eyes.
Who taught you that?
I don't know whether I was taught that in the army, not but I know on the, when I used to stand up there looking over, I used to, you know, look over, sort of, you know.
Would you have to be careful for... traversing machine guns and things
Oh, yeah, you've got to be... You see, the point was that at night, it's usually quiet. You see, you get these shells intermittently coming over, probably dropping at the back and dropping out. And if he found he was getting... If you found he was getting a bit excited, he might... Jerry might drop three or four shells over, you know, on the trench. Not on you, but on the trench particularly. But if you heard a machine gun go, you used to get down quick because you never knew whether he was after you or not, you see. If you heard a machine gun traversing, you could hear the bullets plopping in the tins, you know. You'd get quite used to keeping down.
Now, in the day, you'd be on your own with a periscope.
You'd never be on the top. You're not standing too as such in the day. You've got your periscope, then you can sit down and look over the top.
Would you keep a constant look through it, looking
well,
at...
Well, somebody's got to. Somebody's got to.
What...
There's usually two of you.
What sort of periscope did you have? Was it an army issue one, or a private one, or a homemade one?
No, the little tiny things we used to have, like a little looking glass. And they used to fit on top of your bayonet. And they used to stand and, you know, rifle in your bayonet and just hold it up and you could see. You could move about this and put it on. It's like a little glass that went, you know, quite a small thing. But quite efficient. You looked in this looking glass, really, quite efficient. You could see, you know, quite reasonable.
Could you see much during the day? What would you see from through this?
Nothing. Nothing. I mean, you'd never see any movement of a German. When I was a sniper, by the way.
I'll come to that actually. If we could keep it to sentry duty at the moment.
Yes, well, the ordinary way is during the day. It wasn't necessary to stand up and look over the top. I say you had these periscopes, and there were two of you, and you used to take it in turns to. Oh, it might be on every bay. I mean, nearly everybody got a periscope and, you know, used to have a look. But it's very seldom we could see anything. Like us, I suppose, everybody, all the Germans were down. They weren't wandering about. You might look at one now and again. You might see one sort of run over the top from one trench to another. But in the ordinary way, very seldom we saw anybody at our distance.
Yeah. What were your routine daily jobs that you'd have to do during the actual day? Would you have your breakfast after you?
Well, you see, you'd get your breakfast the ordinary way, and you see, you got to make some provision when you shaved or washed or try to get tidy or keep your trench tidy or something like that or. You see, you might be building a parapet, you might be filling sandbags, anything. Covering latrines, digging latrines, digging a hole. It might be like that all day.
You mentioned filling sandbags. Was there a problem there when it was wet? I mean, you described...
Well, you never filled them when it was wet. It was hopeless. Hopeless. You see, and if there are only two of you on. You see, in the ordinary way, then say that there are two of you on the trench. All the rest of you, say there's another four of you, or your section, you'd be down in the dugout getting asleep. See, because they'd probably been up all night. You can't rest at night, you're on duty pretty well at night. So during the day, you get your sleep, you see.
Would people sleep for a long period, or was it cat
napping? No, it was cat size all the time. But you used to be very, very, you know, you used to get a damn good sleep. You slept well, you know. I've slept marching. Marching along gets so tired. You get so exhausted, you just flop and you're gone.
So during the day, there'd be a variety of people sleeping and working?
Oh, yes. There are some people on duty at one side of the trench. The other people, you see, you might be on fatigue. You might have to go down and get ready for your rations or bring something up or bring up duckboards, bring up wire, bring up anything. So
now,
you're never at a loose end.
You were a sniper. How were the snipers organised during this period?
I was the only one, you see, in my battalion. I had a post. Well, I
the
made
whole
a,
battalion?
No, I say, of my company. I was the only one, you see. And previous to me, there's been snipers as well, and they used to leave a post, a sniper post, you see. And usually it's a place to look at. Break in the trenches to look. And I had my periscope. I never looked over, of course. I used to have my periscope and, you know, if there was any movement, I used to have a sort of hole to look through and I'd have a go. But I don't remember even... I've shot at one or two fellas who I saw moving, you see. I'd keep my eye on a trench that had been bashed in a bit, you know, where you got to move from there to there. And when they move... When Jerry moves with his head, I'd probably have a go at him then, but I don't remember shooting anybody. I don't remember seeing a German as such, as a body. I've seen heads going across the trench, like they've seen ours, no doubt. But I don't remember.
What did this look like, this hole? I can't quite visualise it, if you can see what I mean. Why weren't you visible in this, you know, looking through this?
Well, no, suppose you have two sandbags and just divide them, you know, so... Like that, you know. You only got this far to look through, you know. That's all.
About three or four inches wide, then?
Ah, he could see a hell of a long way. He could see everything, particularly if it was like that. See? And my rifle was permanently there. And my telescopic sight was on the rifle. And it was pointed at a certain spot. I never looked down there. I just kept my eye on that spot where it was, where the trench had gone, you see. That's the only thing I could do. Never snipe anybody else. Mm.
So your technique was just to carry, just to wait.
Just
were
wait.
You not worried about someone spotting the hole in, and firing through the hole?
When I did fire, I used to move quick. See? I used to get out of the way quick and probably go somewhere else. So farther down the trench or something.
Can I just check this with you? What you do, you wouldn't look through the hole. You'd look through your periscope, and then when you saw someone, you'd go for your rifle and fire quickly through the
hole. I'd go for my telescopic sight and look at the, through, you know.
But that would be the procedure.
Well, that's the procedure.
You wouldn't look through your telescopic sight.
Oh no! You've got to get the general outlook for a start. You see, you couldn't. I mean, it's very, very minimal the sight of your telescopic sight. So, and I, as I say, I used to move.
How much of a day would you spend doing that?
Oh, I would only say 2 hours on, that's all, and then I'd have a rest. That's all. No longer.
As a snipe, did anybody else unofficially snipe, or was it just...
Oh, there'd be another fella take my lot over. There's, say, two of us in this game. Or, in my company, might be three of us. Of snipers taught, and we'd take it the whole lot on, and then the others be resting while you're on, while the fellows on duty, you see.
So,
and of course, when white night comes, you're not on.
So during the day, they'd usually be a
one of us on duty.
But you say, as far as you're concerned, all you were aiming at were the tops of hair or heads.
Yes.
And you couldn't tell, you wouldn't know whether you'd hit anyone.
No,
or not.
Never. I could never tell whether I'd hit a Jerry that way.
Did you think it was worthwhile?
Well, they thought it was worthwhile, because don't forget this: the fear was always there. You see, and it's like you in your trench. You used to be damn careful about keeping your head down. See?
We might as well deal with that while you've mentioned it. The fear of was German sniping a threat to you?
Well, in such a way, yes. You see, you knew damn well that they were going to do the same to you. You'll do it to them, and consequently. If you found that the trench was a bit low, you used to crawl past. You never stood up to go, you know, where the trench had been probably uneven at the top. The parapet was a bit uneven. They were just as wise about things as we were.
Well, did you suffer from casualties from snipers, or was it?
Well, yes. There were one or two of our fellows got it straight through the middle of the head.
How did that happen? Was that from being careless, or was it from usually just passing one of these lower points that they didn't...
Just passing through one of these places that were open to be shot at. And I remember one fellow got... It was about 7 o'clock at night. Oh, his granddad is a sergeant. He got straight through his helmet. Only one shot. Straight through his helmet. And he's a dead.
So there were casualties from sniping, but were there a lot?
Yes. Oh no, I don't think there are not very many. The casualties we get, of course, shell fire all the time. But even then, the shell fire wasn't terribly heavy there. It is what we call a quiet time. But we had one experience for about half an hour. What I call a barrage, and it's one of those things that you don't want twice.
And could you describe, that was at Bethune?
At Bethune, yes, in the trench.
Could you describe it, what happened, or well, what it felt like more than what happened?
Well, I was, this thing, because we'd had shell fire, intermittent shells had come over, but all of a sudden, Jerry decided to give us a real taste of war. And I think every battery that he got was turned on, say, a quarter of a mile of the trench, and it was appalling, the noise and the rattle and the shells bursting on top of the trench, because we were laying in the bottom of the trench. I was scared stiff, petrified actually, and I heard the fellas screeching for retaliation, asking our gunners, you know, to retaliate, but he just kept at it for about half an hour, and it was really dreadful, really dreadful. Because you've got to be dead any minute, you see. If one of those shells had landed in the trench anywhere near it, you would fall it before they went over and in the front and not actually...
So they didn't. None of the shells actually landed in the trench
no.
near where you were?
Fortunately, nobody. We didn't have any casualties, funny enough, in my section, but about 100 yards they copped it up there. About four fellas got it up there. But no one near me got it.
When you were under that bombardment, how did you decide where to take cover? Did you go into a dugout? Did you lie on the fire step or right at the bottom?
I was in the cubbyhole. In my cubbyhole, there was only probably, you see, say in the bottom of the trench, say the trench was 6 foot deep and the cubbyhole was only, say, only really 2 foot from the top. And a shell would have landed there, blown as hell. Had a shell landed anywhere near, we're gunners, but you felt safe in the bottom of the trench.
Did you have any superstitions or rituals that you had, in, you know, to try
nope.
about shell fire?
No, none whatever.
Avoid it?
I only know that the first, I was really terrified in my life. Absolutely terrified, stuck numb with terror, with this constant shelling, you see. I mean, when you get shells dropped,